I was making more money off the real estate than it was law practice.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Senziano, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, I'm doing great, bro. How are you?
Always making it happen, big man. Very excited about today's guest. We're going to learn a lot today. We have one of the industry legends coming on the show. So without further ado, we have Sam Freshman. Sam is the author of Principles of Real Estate Syndication, the industry acknowledged Bible on syndication, and founder of the private real estate investment firm Standard Management Company. Sam is admired by many, and we're very pleased to have him on the show. So again, without further ado, Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Let's take it back a couple of years and tell us how you got started in this this crazy game of real estate.
Started in, I graduated law school in 1957, a little while back.
A couple years back.
Went to Stanford, came down to L.A. because my parents had moved there, and I wanted to live in the pool house, and said to my dad, "Dad, you told me to go to law school." I was originally pre-med. I didn't like it, so switched. But you didn't tell me what kind of law. I discovered there's all kinds, you know, tax law, patent law, all kinds of stuff. Without hesitating, he'd only been in California for about 2 weeks. He said, go into real estate. That's where all the money's made in California. So I got a real estate license as well as passed the bar and went to work for Jacob Stern, which was the original owner in the 1800s of all kinds of Hollywood, everything that was Hollywood, La Mirada, La Habra, maybe about six different communities. I worked for them for a year and then opened my law office, practiced law, did some real estate on the side. By 1982, I was making more money off the real estate than it was law practice.
Mm-hmm.
I went to my partners and gave them the keys and said, here, you guys can have this. I can't afford to do law anymore because I was making in 1 year what I would make in 10 years of law practice. And just went on from there.
Sam, can you tell us the progression of how you got into the real estate and how you built it up and within 20 years and replaced your income tenfold? I mean, that's a big process. And more than that, did you like law? Once you went into law,
did
you
like law? I like law, certain parts of it. I didn't like going to court, but I liked the transactional law and writing contracts. And did a lot of speaking. I was an expert witness pretty early. And I still do some of that occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the fun is, because as a lawyer, you're expected to be an advocate for your client.
Mm-hmm.
But as an expert witness, you have to appear to be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to train the lawyers when they hired me, who got a little over aggressive. I said, look, you're going to blow this case and kill my expert witness testimony. Unless you let me throw a few things to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Won't be determinative, but will show that I'm somewhat neutral.
And so how'd you get into real estate?
How did I get the real estate?
How did you get into the real estate business? How did you start investing? Were you syndicating deals or were you buying deals on your own?
No, I was syndicating. I had clients.
Mm-hmm.
They had money to invest. And in those days, I wouldn't look at it unless it was a 9 cap. And today, of course, I'm lucky to get a 4.5 or 5. But
And you're getting ripped off, Sam.
So the investors get a preference.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, 9 or 10%. And then if I exceeded that, why I'd share in that anywhere from a third to a half of the exit profits over and above the preference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still pretty much that way. It's relatively simple. I like real estate because once the case was over, I got to start working all over again. But in real estate, if I buy a shopping center or an apartment building or something like that, once I get rented, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I give it to the management department. We do manage almost all our own properties. And it's great. The main thing, and pretty much is when you and I were talking earlier, is never sell. People ask me, how do you get so rich? I said, it's very simple. I'm not smart. I'm rather clever, but not smart. And I learned very early, I made a lot of mistakes. The biggest mistakes were I didn't buy enough,
mm-hmm.
and I sold too soon.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of the 1960s, we became strictly buy and hold. And the key to getting really rich is to never sell. Hardly ever sell anything anymore. Not borrow too much. I have friends that are worth a lot more than I am, but they take out 75 and 80% loans and get wiped out in the next recession.
Mm-hmm.
There's 6 major recessions, and survived every one of them. We get down to where we can only pay the mortgage sometimes. Mm-hmm. In 2007, I got really beat up in Vegas, in Nevada. But we hung on, and now we're getting double what we were getting pre-2007.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all our excess cash flow was wiped out at that time. And I've been through 6 sessions like that since the 1960s.
So, Sam, how do you convey to your investors, hey, I'm going to buy and I'm not going to give you your money back. I'm going to hold this asset forever because we're on that cusp right now. That's what we want to do. We do it internally ourselves. We love buying deals ourselves because just me, Jake, and another partner, if we don't take a draw this month, hey, Jake, the septic fields went out. We're not getting paid. It's okay. Next month, let's refi this money and let's roll into another deal. How do you convey to your investors that that's the right way to do it? Because I love the model personally.
Well, there's pros and cons. There's a lot of people that make money turning it over quickly,
mm-hmm.
three to five years. The millennials generally want to do that. They don't understand. But then there's also a lot of 70 and 80 year old guys at the country club that are buying for their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them right up front, we are probably not going to sell this property if it performs well forever, hopefully. We do have a situation where, under certain circumstances, they can back out. For example, if somebody has a divorce, or they're moving out of town, or they're changing their estate, we do an appraisal of the property, and we buy them out at 90% of what they would have got if we sold the property.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Sam, what would make you want to sell a property? If you had to.
We have, out of the couple hundred that we've been through, I think we only have currently narrowed it down to this. But we bought and sold earlier in the 60s, 70s, 80s. If the area deteriorates, we did that once in Vegas where the particular neighborhood decline.
Mm-hmm.
And the shopping centers, some of our partners pressured us.
Mm-hmm.
We were major partners with Northwestern Mutual Life for about 30 years. And we had 6,000 units with them, but we only had 14 properties, large ones.
Mm-hmm.
And we had shopping centers with them. We also had Kemper, I don't know if they're around anymore, but it's another major life insurance company. And they wanted to sell, and it was 90% their money.
Mm-hmm.
We had a typical deal would be a 70% first mortgage. We, today, now that we've got a lot of cash around, we only take a 60% mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of stress test it, like the government does the banks. We want to be able to make the mortgage payment if the interest rate, if the rents go down 30%. That's mm-hmm. a stress test. Make sure that we don't get wiped out in a recession. That's how it works. We lose one half of our prospects because they want something that's going to be sold in 5 years or so.
More of a mm-hmm. flip model, right?
Yeah. And that's okay. It's a different way.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is if you get your hands on too much cash, you spend it.
Sounds like Gino talking to his wife.
Hey, Mr. Stenziano's got the SAT credit cards. Have you ever heard of that? It's Starbucks, Amazon, and Target. His wife's using the credit card, and he sees those three charges over and over and over again. So talk about spending.
Every
my
week.
Wife. My wife likes that all the time. So, Sam, what do you like when you look at an investment? I know you haven't bought that many deals in the you know most recently, but when you're evaluating an asset, how do you evaluate it for, I'm going to buy this thing and hold this thing for a long term? What are you looking for?
Well, we're looking for the trend. Number one, is the area improving,
mm-hmm.
same, or declining?
Mm-hmm.
We have occasionally bought where it's fairly stable. If we can get a high enough return to justify that.
Mm-hmm.
We have some property in Oklahoma that's like that. We bought it at a 12 cap, and it's just sort of stayed there in the four. So to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Could be worse.
Yeah. That was, I don't know, maybe 30 years ago. It's now free and clear. Eventually get the mortgage paid off. We do something different than most syndicators. We don't refinance.
Mm-hmm.
We work towards getting the property free and clear. And we really sleep at night. that takes about anywhere from 20 to 30 years. Maybe 10, 15% of our portfolio now, there's no debt. We started out with maybe a 60, 70% loan.
Wow.
And that's when things get really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
We usually factor in about 3% per year average growth. Sometimes it exceeds that. Sometimes it makes it. A few times it hasn't, but
mm-hmm.
generally, so compound interest is tremendous magic. You know, 3% a year, every 20 years or whatever. If nothing else happened, the value of the property doubled.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that. So, Sam, let me ask you, since you're the king of syndicators, what do you tell the listeners the pros and the cons of syndication? Because everyone thinks that syndication is just this great tool. We call it a tool in the toolbox. Can you give us some of the pros of it and then maybe some of the cons of syndication?
Well, the pros are it's you're increasing your returns tremendously. You have, let's say, $100,000 to invest. You can put it into a property and own the whole thing yourself. Small property, maybe mm-hmm. units or something. Or it used to be anyway. Or you can go out and get 9 other people and buy $1 million property.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bring the investors in, you're going to take eventually 20% of the profit.
Mm-hmm.
For putting the deal together.
Mm-hmm.
So if you started out, to make it simple, let's say at a 5 cap,
mm-hmm.
and you bought $100,000 property, you get a 5 cap on $100,000. Forgetting the growth, if you take that and just take 10% of the profits,
mm-hmm.
get 9 friends to also put up $100,000, then you're making a 5 cap, you're making 9 points, 20% mm-hmm. or 5% the 9 other investors. You're only making maybe 4% on your own, but you're making 13% versus 5.
Mm-hmm.
Just by the simple act of syndicating, if you purchased correctly,
mm-hmm.
you're making 3-4 times what you'd make if mm-hmm. you just bought your own property. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that you can buy larger properties.
Mm-hmm.
And there's great advantages to that. For example, if I have a 50-unit property, it's going to cost me maybe $40,000 to have a manager, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I have a 200-unit property, it's not going to cost me 160 units. It's only going to cost me, instead of 40, it might cost me 70.
Mm-hmm.
But per unit, the price is dropped in half.
Mm-hmm. Economies of scale, yes.
It's a lot of scale, particularly in the labor portion.
Mm-hmm.
You can have 300 units, and you only have you can have 2 on-site mechanics to take care of all the equipment and everything,
mm-hmm.
Versus paying outside electricians and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's tremendous savings on scale.
Mm-hmm.
But you hadn't thought about it. Very few people think about that because they want to own their own deal. They want to have to deal with 9 other investors who are going to mm-hmm. tell, oh, you should have painted this room this. But it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Put up with that aggravation.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, you have a nasty partner. It hasn't been that bad, really. I think we have maybe 40, 50 investors, and we only have 1 or 2 that are really sort of aggravations.
So you would say that the pros are you're leveraging money, you're getting much better returns, you're having scalability, you're having the economies of scale. I think you're also able to build a business from that also. That's the rosy picture of it. The cons are you're going to have to deal with investors. You're going to have to deal with that, you know. It's a Pareto rule. If you're going to have, 100 investors, I wouldn't say 20, but you're going to have 3 or 4 or 5 that are going to drive you nuts. But it's worth it, everybody out there. And Sam's talking about the long game. He's not talking about getting rich in the next 6 to 12 months. He's talking about buying a deal and playing the long game, which I think everyone has to. When you're building a business, it's like building a multifamily portfolio. You're not going to get rich overnight. That's why a lot of people don't do it. The syndication that Jake was talking about, the fix and flip, the flip model where people are in and 3 years later, they're out, they made their fees and they're on to the next golden goose. They just slayed this one. They're on to the next one. I don't think that's what we're promoting. I think we're just talking about buying a really good deal, trying to run that deal, trying to make it as efficient as possible, trying to get some great investors on board who share your vision. You know, you have to be honest with the investors up front and say, this is what I want to do. And if it's not a good fit, that's okay. And just move on to the next one. So I wanted to recap all of that.
Continually adding to that depreciation pool too. You know, continually mm-hmm. bringing new deals in to add to the depreciation pool.
One other thing that I want to get across.
Sure.
That is, when we buy a property today, the best we can do is get a 5% return in the neighborhoods we want to be. And usually what less. We have to find something that we can value add. So we're getting, let's say, a 5% return on a property that's just built last year, and there's not much more you can do to it. Or you buy a property that was built in 1980, and you're going to, you can redo the apartments, you can fix up the grounds, and in most of the neighborhoods we look at, because we're looking where the trend is up, we can make 20% on the money we put into the property that we bought. We're constantly, as we're improving the property, the yield is increasing. Maybe a point a year, 2 points a year. And that excess, we don't distribute that excess to the partners. If it's a 6% distribution, that's what they're going to get for a while. All that excess that we're building goes back into the property. And in 10 years, we've doubled its value.
I love that. That's awesome. Off camera, we had spoken about where we are in the cycle. Since you've been through various cycles, a lot of them, we talked about being in extra innings and it's overextended by a couple of years. Where do you see happening in the next recession? Do you see, I mean, because right now we're talking about artificially low interest rates. So we've never had something like this for the last 10 years.
Down.
So, and they're going down. So what do you think, what are your feelings are going forward? Do you see these cap rates staying compressed? Do you see the, because also Sam, the other thing that's going on, which I think is people don't talk about as much, is a student debt, $1.6 trillion in student debt, where I was just talking to Jake about it right now. People are renting homes. The American dream is not having a house. I mean, unless you're Gino, who has six kids and you need a house. I wouldn't be living in a house. I'd be renting if I had one kid or if I was, you know, just married or just single. So where do you see it going in the future, the cap rates and rates of return?
Well, I don't think we'll get back to 10% for a while. It'll be interesting to see what happens here with this thing that's started in China and coming around. I'm not smart enough to all I can do is just keep continuing to we do two things. One is, of course, we buy property and we fix it up. And look to the long term. And we also have a short-term business. We're a gap and bridge lender. So we do finance other people that are on a fix and flip. We'll lend anywhere from 3 weeks to 3 years. For example, banks, most of our loans come from banks on referral. Some brokers will refer to us as well. They have a client who's buying an empty building. Banks don't like to lend on empty buildings. We don't care. If we like it, we'll lend on it. We get empty buildings. We look for other things that banks don't generally care for. And we're conservative. We go in to our 60-65%. So we're looking for people that have some money are conscious of the interest rate. We'll charge you anywhere from 6 to 8%, where a lot of the private lenders go into 10 and 12. But they're charging much more interest than that. So we're conservative, but if somebody needs a gap or bridge loan, we'll be be happy to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Keep your eyes open. I'll pay a referral fee.
We got your back.
Jake, I like it. He's got the multifaceted multifamily. He's doing some lending. He's owning apartments. He's doing property management. He's syndicating. He's doing it all. So,
and he's closing deals on the show today. So it's perfect.
Before we go to the short answer questions, what would you tell investors out there? How would you tell an investor that wants to get into multifamily? How should they start to get into multifamily? What's the, I guess, the framework, or what are the next steps that they need to take to get into multifamily?
Well, find a partner that's in it. Work mm-hmm. with them for a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's a lot easier to raise money that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because the investor only asks one question, general. That's, how much skin do you have in this game?
Yes.
So if you say, let's say you hook up with some guy that's very successful and you just have a small piece of the deal and you're going to go out and work for him looking for deals. You get an investor and you say, well, the sponsors, you know, I'm a sponsor of this deal. We've put in X dollars. Well, actually, 80% of it is the other guy's money, but you learn it. And I recommend that people usually do that for anywhere from maybe 1 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they go on and build up their capital and their experience, then they then go out.
Mm-hmm.
I have graduates from Standard Management Company that have gone out. They've been here usually a lot longer, 5 to 7 years, but those guys go out and they're making a couple $100 million now.
Mm-hmm.
Got maybe 4 or 5 that I could rattle off on one hand.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very proud of them. A couple of cases, I tell them, you guys are too smart to continue to be here working do it yourself.
I like that. It's a good idea. Education times action equals results. Getting in the game and partnering with somebody who's doing it and leveraging their talents, maybe leveraging their intelligence, their experience, and their network too. Love that.
All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor. Gino and I are super excited to tell you about the audiobook version of The Honeybee, which was recently released.
The Honeybee tells the story of Noah, a disappointed, disaffected salesman who feels like his life is going nowhere until the day he has a chance encounter with a man named Tom Barnum, the beekeeper. In his charming, down-home way, Tom, the bee man, teaches Noah and his wife Emma how to grow their personal wealth using the lessons he learned from his beekeeping passion.
In the audio version, Gino and I sat down for an exclusive interview after each chapter where we elaborate on the stings we felt throughout the business, the importance of scaling up, and how we've been able to create multiple streams of revenue.
For more information and to get your copy of the audiobook, visit jakeandgino.com/honeybee.
All right, we are back. We want to dive into your habits, Sam. What is your best habit for success? Something you may do on a daily basis or a weekly basis that's led to your success?
Well, I guess marketing is one mm-hmm. thing. This idea of not pushing to make people happy by distributing the money.
discipline.
Putting in discipline. It's probably discipline and picking good partners and due diligence, mainly what happens later is a result of what happens before you buy the property.
Mm-hmm.
Look at tenant troubles. If you have trouble with tenants, it's just you're not doing your due diligence on the tenants to the extent you should. There's all kinds of services you can get to see if they've committed a crime or done something else. Try and find out if you can who their last landlord was and ask them about, a lot of due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
We generally want to have at least 30 days to check the property out, make sure that there's no environmental problems, tenant problems, things of that nature. So it's just a matter of being careful. Sometimes you have to be a little bit aggressive and looking, but I don't know anything other than that.
So I want to share this story with the listeners. When I contacted Mr. Freshman to be on the podcast, I think it was a Saturday that I had reached out to him. And Sunday, my phone rings and it's a Beverly Hills number. And I'm like, this must be some telemarketer or somebody. And I picked it up and it was Sam on the phone. And I'm like, it's Sunday. I'm like, he's my hero. He's working his butt off. He's, you know, I mean, he's been doing this for 30 years. So for me, the lesson is, I think Sam has an intense joy for what he does. I think we all need to find that in what we do. We need to find our sole purpose and our passion. But the second thing is, you have to work hard. You have to put a lot of time and a lot of effort into it and look at it as part of the long game. But what struck me was no one calls me on Sundays. I had a phone call from Sunday on Sundays in real estate. I was so happy. I called Jacob. I said, Sam Freshman called me on a Sunday. We scheduled a podcast. So for me, that was like, that's my hero right there.
Yeah. You know, the other thing is, look, I don't have a boat. I don't have a plane. I don't play golf. I don't play tennis. I love buying property. All my kids are basically gone. I see them maybe once a month for dinner or something.
Mm-hmm.
They're all either in college or out in their own businesses. So what am I going to do?
I can live in that simple good life.
I can call you Uncle Sam because I have none of those except tennis. I like to play tennis and the kids are around all the time. But other than that, I love to do deals. I hate golf. No boat for me. No plane for me. So, I mean, it's just I feel it from you. I totally agree. And it's not really about making money as much as it is having fun, enjoying yourself, serving others, and, you know, getting those emails back from investors and saying, did a great job on this, or an employee writing back to you and saying, hey, this is great. So being locked in and being active and it's just giving back.
The other thing, I guess, which is probably part of my success, is focusing on contacts,
mm-hmm.
networking. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always been, network has always been a hobby with me. I have 10,000 names in my database.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, that was accumulated over the 60 years. But if we send out something and we got a property to buy, generally, I'm not too far down the list before I raise the money.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Doing networking, doing speaking. I started speaking right after I got out of college. And that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there and speak. Go to meetings. Go to where the money is. One of the tricks I've found is, you know, you get a letter in the mail and somebody's offering you a free dinner
because
they want to sell you something. Or something. I used to always go to those things because I'd pick up my investors.
Now that's innovative thinking. That is a great tip because I've got those all the time in my house and I never go.
Oh,
and I'm short-sighted clearly. It's a great, oh man.
You know, why do I want to go to this and listen to this pitch about this guy and his crazy soap that he's selling or whatever? Because those are people who are interested in making investments.
Mm-hmm.
And you could sit there at the dinner table, you're going to meet three or four people. And so I used to do that a lot, that kind of thing.
All right, Jake. That's on the list to do, bro. Yeah,
got it. Sam, what do you think about having your own management company versus using third-party management?
That's an interesting thing. I've always done it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in the earlier days, we'd start out, if we had a 100-unit or 200-unit building, that was the first one, we'd use a local management company. Until we had maybe 1,000 units in the area. We have like, 2,000 units in Vegas and about 1,000 units in Reno. And in both those cities, we use local managing for the first couple purchases. But once we got established, then we put our own operation in. I know some of my graduates, they won't touch the management. We work with a company called Gelt, a bunch of young guys that I mentored. And in 7 years, they grew to the same size I put together in 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
They only use third-party management, and they focus strictly on looking for property. Something that takes time, and you know that. You guys, I think, said do your own management. Some guys say they can't afford to do that. They want to just focus on and think about buying more property.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say, from my own standpoint, I'm happy with it, and I'm doing. My growth has been strictly value add on my properties, so I've had to do a lot of. Attention anyway, so it turned out that it was probably a good thing for this market.
Mm-hmm.
But I know guys that have done very well, much better than I have even, and they only use outside management. But there's a lot of things you can do on the properties. For example, where does the money go? The money goes first into the rents, which go through the management company. We get a lot of credit from that money. We have a line of credit at the bank because we have millions of dollars in the bank from the handling the rent ourselves rather than having a third party. We also get paid for that. It's small,
mm-hmm.
1.5% or something, 2%. But again, the advantages of scale, as we talked about, I probably wouldn't do it today if I didn't have a big portfolio.
Mm-hmm. Where
the management, you know, management's usually what, about 3% in multifamily, maybe 2.5% in a real big property. Well, that's pretty good. It's, it may cost you, may give you, let's say, $200,000 in management fees, working on larger properties like we do, $200,000-$300,000. It doesn't cost us that much because we have the advantage of scale.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I would knock it because some of the biggest guys I know will only use Alliance or AMC or one of the big management. Focus on buying property or selling property or something. Since we don't buy or sell, we could spend more time focusing on improving what we have.
Mm-hmm.
That's been most of what we've done over the last 3 or 4 years. Prior to that, of course, we were out there very aggressively grabbing what we could.
Sam, any book recommendations that you want to share with the listeners?
Well, there's Principles of Real Estate Syndication. There's also another book called You're Never Old Enough to Know Better, which is the one that I think your partner just said he gave to his kids.
Mm-hmm.
how to live your life. It's all the things that I've learned. The example is Ms. Heikkinen. Ms. Heikkinen was my high school social science teacher. I loved her. I thought the world of her, and she gave me good grades. I was a good student in her class. And she made an assignment for everybody to give a talk to the class. And there's no question I gave the best presentation. All the guys in the class, and I gave the best presentation. I got a B+. Mary Ann got an A. I went to Ms. Heikkinen and said, Ms. Heikkinen, I've always gotten an A. This is my first B+ in your class. Why did Mary Ann get an A? Well, Sam, it's true. Your speech was better than hers, than anybody's in the class. However, Mary Ann did the best she could, and you could have done better. And that has stuck with me.
You still want that A.
So when I get into a large transaction, I always think of Ms. Heikkinen. Now, wait a minute, even though I could do this or that, with my hands tied behind my back, I better dig in and do the best I can. So I have stuff like that I'll give you one more. My wife and I are going down the Yangtze River to visit China. And we get on the boat, and we've been told to don't take the cabin room that they give you with your tour, because it's sort of like they used to have it in the trains. So, the bed comes out of the wall and it's all that. Asked to see the regular room, which is $100 extra. Whatever it was. So when we get on, they show us and we said, can we see the regular room? Yeah, it's $100 extra. So we go there. And we said, do you have anything better than this? It was nice. It was like a hotel bed. Yes, he says, we have two apartments on the boat, which are about three times the size. He said, let's see those. Nobody's taken them yet. So we go to the back of the boat, and there's a big outside area to sit for these two, bigger than for the other 70. And I said, okay. I said, how much extra is that? And he said, $500. And I looked out, and we'd left the dock, and we were in the middle of the river now. And I said, tell you what, I'll give you $250. He says, I can't do that. Only the captain could agree to that. I said, what happens now that we're out into the river? He says, they'll be vacant for the rest of the trip. I said, go ask the captain. He came back a little sheepishly. The captain said, grab us. So stories like that,
You never know till you ask.
That's right. That's one of the things I always teach my new employees. Never fail to ask. You'll be surprised at 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 people will give it to you.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
That's happened many times. What do you want? You want $20 million? No. We can only give you 15. No. 8 times it's going to be turned down. The other times it's, well, I'll go back and ask it. It said, we'll take it. Always ask.
Sam, what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you if they want one of those bridge loans?
The best way would be to call us 310-410-2300. Extension 5306. 310-410-2300. 2300, extension 5306. That's probably the best. And then there's a couple others. Extension 5331, that's Erin. She's in charge of processing the inquiries. And the first one was my extension. And then there's sfreshman@standardmanagement.com.
Wow.
So that's the email.
Gino, my two favorite quotes, never sell, and I wasn't making enough money practicing law. It's beautiful.
I love that, Jake.
I'm sorry, I can't afford to work in law. That's what it was. Beautiful.
Hit me up a little bit more because there was a lot here. I mean, the couple of things that I take away. When you're looking for property management or third-party property management, check out what your priorities are. If you're looking to scale, that might not be the right choice to you. But from Sam's story about his social studies teacher, it seemed as if property management allowed him to add value and not leave any money on the table.
Maximize return
on that one. And he wasn't looking just to scale and just look to grow and grow his ego, but he wanted to eat was on his plate, focus on that. And he knew he could do a better job. So if he thought he gives it to a third party property management, maybe that third party may not be able to pull it through like he does. So that's a lesson when you learn when you're younger in life that sticks with you. That's really awesome. The second one is the supply and demand. It's really crucial. Jake, you made me start reading Sam Zell's book about supply and demand. And it just brought me to that story also. If there's no demand for something, then you have it, right? Right now there's such a demand for apartments and cap rates are really compressed. But that story really pulls it into me as far as the supply and demand goes. And like I said, just look at your priorities. I think syndication is an awesome tool in the toolbox. It's a great way to scale. Sam had mentioned multiple times about the economies of scale and growing your portfolio and focusing on that. So I tell everyone to get out there and buy Sam's book because it's a great book. It's not an easy read on your first read. You've got to read it a couple times. It took me a couple times to understand it, but his other books are awesome. They're awesome for your kids. So if you're out there looking to find something for your children to start learning about money, I would definitely look into those books.
Excellent. Sam, thank you so much for your time.
With regard to the books,
mm-hmm.
Yes, there's a series called The Smartest Way to Save. That series is for your wife. Be sure you buy that one of those books.
Will that help with the Starbucks, Amazon, and Target, Sam?
the smartest way to save more and the smartest way to save big.
Excellent.
Good. Thanks, Sam. We appreciate your time today.
Sam, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay. Good seeing you guys.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.